All right, on today's episode of Kick to Kick, we look at the year 1898. We also have our very first mailbag, which we will open and read out some letters from our fans. We have a special guest, very first special guest of the year. We will focus on the teams from 1898, as well as the final system. We'll go through the grand final and the players who caught our eye. And finally, Kaz will try and redeem himself with a new ending to the show. All that and more coming up after the song.
It's the history of football we knows about, and we want to expand what we know. We'll become such intelligent gentry with every kick to kick show. Beginning in the time 1870, right through to the modern day. Tune in for Timmy Coops and the Kazman to hear what they all have to say.
Yes, and welcome to the Kick to Kick podcast, episode 2, in which we will be focusing on the year 1898. My name is Tim. Over to my right, I have Coops.
G'day, everyone.
To my left, I have the Kazman.
Hello, everybody.
And our very first guest ever on the show, Murph, sitting in the middle.
It's great to be here. Oh.
Lucky to have Murph as well. He's the first person who actually listened to our show.
So it was a great episode, episode 0. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening.
So looking forward to getting
long time listener, first time guest.
Looking forward to getting stuck in to Murph with some questions about football. But before we get to anything, we've got some mail. All right, so let's open the mailbag, shall we? And I don't know why I'm scrunching paper because
it was email. Makes it sound real.
All right, I think Kaz, you've got our first letter.
Okay, it says this. Hi there, Tim, Charlie, and Kazman. Everyone's calling me Kaz. Nice. Long-time listener, first-time writer. I'm not much of an Aussie rules history buff, but I'm loving the podcast. Aww. I was curious to hear about whether or not the Blues were really called the Butchers. I'm a Pies fan, but I'll bet with a name like the Butchers, the old Navy Blues might have won a few more flags. So, fellas, what's the story? All the best and continue a great professional podcast. Sincerest regards, Ryan from Murrumbina. Well, thank you, Ryan. Now, we do have the answer. Sorry, we neglected to clear that up. So, from research around that era, we understand that Carlton was once colloquially called the Butchers, owing to the cream chamois colour our Guernseys became over time, which resembled the colour of a butcher's attire. From then on, again, according to the Carlton story, it would seem that our orange cap was abandoned for an all dark blue cap. There is no doubt that this is when Carlton players became known as the Dark Blues, it says. Although white also was always appeared in clubs' uniforms since 1871 as well. So there you go.
And the blue came from their stockings as well.
That the Melbourne guy brought across.
Yeah. And we got the red ones and they got the blues.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, Coops, you've got the second letter.
The second letter I've got here reads, "Hi, Kicks of Kickers. You said on last week's show that the push in the back rule was abolished at the start of the year. Obviously, it came back in. Can you tell us when? Thanks, Will from Cremorne." Now, we talked about this straight after the show and we thought we actually forgot to mention the fact that it did come back in. Obviously, there was a huge uproar and it lasted for how long, Tim?
One round.
It lasted for the opening round of 1897. And then after that, they just decided that what sort of game is it when you can just push people in the back?
Could you imagine the chaos?
Yeah, exactly. Ridiculous.
Wasn't the report that we read, the players, the officials, and the spectators all complained?
Yeah, no one liked it.
No.
Yeah. The players, it was ridiculous.
So round two.
Round two, it was straight back in 1897. So, yeah. It's one of the least successful rule changes going around, and that's saying something.
But it makes you think about, even in modern-day football, how much the league actually consider the players' input before changing rules.
Yeah, exactly.
Even back then, it was the same.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was an interesting one.
Yeah, that's why we got this guy in.
Yeah.
Those insights.
Oh, mate.
All right, now, final piece of mail here reads, "Hi, guys. Enjoyed most of the first show, but I thought you'd definitely go over the drama surrounding South Melbourne player Fred Waugh. What gives?" It's from Phil from the Gold Coast. Well, thank you, Phil, for writing in. And one really interesting piece of information I didn't mention was that a South Melbourne player, Fred Waugh, he actually tried to commit suicide on the morning of a game.
So I think it was just before they were, South Melbourne was playing Carlton. They couldn't find him, so they rushed to his place, and his mother found him in his room with his wrists slashed. So what had actually happened was he proposed to his girlfriend at the time, and she knocked him back, saying she was not going to, she wasn't going to marry a player or footballer who's earning only £2 a week. So you know, because of the importance of love, he tried to kill himself. Oh, was not successful. He actually missed or didn't cut the right veins, supposedly, and survived, and actually came back to play football again. In, I think the year 1900, but was probably never the same.
No.
But if you can imagine, that would be huge news these days.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Well, the fact that you're getting knocked back because you're not getting paid enough is
well, that wouldn't happen these days.
Not happening anymore, surely.
No, absolutely
not. For a professional player, but
no. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, Phil from the Gold Coast, for writing in about that, because that was a big story that we did miss to, and forget to talk about from 1897. But that moves us. We'll move on now from mail. So just remember, if you want to email us, we do have an email address, which is kicktokickpodcast@gmail.com. So any questions, things we might have missed, please feel free to write in and let us know.
And please follow us on Instagram as well at Kick to Kick Podcast.
I think it's Kick to Kick _ podcast.
Kick to Kick _podcast. Yep. Yeah, thank you.
Yep. But we have a special song at the end of the show that will also give all that information.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
How fitting.
But let's get to our special guest for the day, Murph. Great to have you in here.
Good to be here, thank you. Before you go on, sorry to cut you off, just going back to episode zero, I just want to say how wonderful it is to be your first guest, considering the people you did want on as your first guest, or guests in the future were people like Paul Roos and Kevin Sheedy, so to be your first guest is quite an honour. And I was wondering if you wouldn't mind calling me just for once, just through the speaker, local football legend.
Yes.
Yeah. Right, so let me introduce him again. And we do have in here local football legend Murph. Welcome, Murph.
Great to
welcome,
be here.
Welcome.
Welcome. All right. Now we have questions that we ask everyone when they're on the show.
Great.
First question is: who do you support, and what is the story behind that?
It's quite an involved answer. I'm currently a Melbourne supporter. Supported Melbourne for close to, I don't know, the Kazman and Coops both
severely outnumbered here today.
I really am.
Lots of Melbourne fun going on. But that's only been for the last 6 years or so. Maybe 10 years ago, back when Russell Robinson was taking humongous screamers on the
MCG. Just on the chest.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Before then, however, I didn't support anyone for a while, and because I am an old Fitzroy supporter from back when I was a junior. And supported Fitzroy to the end in 1996, and the Brisbane Lions for a little while. But once the Fitzroy players stopped playing, I sort of dropped off from that too.
Why Fitzroy?
It was a family thing. My dad, my granddad, my great granddad, and so on—all Fitzroy fans. And I know Kazman's a big fan of Kevin Murray. So was my granddad, and spoke really highly of the days when he watched him play. And it was just something my family did. Everyone else went for Fitzroy, so did we. Yeah.
So what was it like then as a Fitzroy supporter in 96?
Well, it was back when I was quite young, I guess. So it was, from what I can remember of it, you know, in 96 I was 12. So, you know, I was a supporter from, you know, the age of 5 or 6 to 12. So only a 5 or 6 year time. Yeah.
But you know, when you're 12, you're sort of right into it as well. You've got, you love those players. So it would have been a big...
Yeah, so I'm pretty vivid memories of from when I was, you know, those 95 and 96 years when I was sort of 10, 11, 12, when my memory sort of can still create clear memory from. So I remember we used to go to a lot of the trainings out at the Witten Oval, and back then you used to be able to see the players coming in and out of the change rooms, you know, straight after the session, after they've showered, and they'd toss you a pair of their dirty socks from training, and, you know, sign your jumper on your back and things, and it was a lot more interaction with the players back then. So, pretty vivid memories of Fitzroy and the Witten Oval back then, yeah. That was good fun, good days.
So what was it like when, you know, obviously you went to the last game?
The last game Fitzroy was in Fremantle in that year, 1996, but the second last game...
The MCG.
At the MCG, I did go to.
Yeah.
I actually saw in that season, saw their last ever win. So they had one win for that season. So we were at the home game at the Witten Oval and saw that last win, which was against Fremantle.
Did you know at the time, like, did you feel at the time it was going to be their last win?
I think it had been a long few years by that stage. Yeah. So any hope of not losing by over 50 points was a win.
Yeah.
And on that particular day, our points were more than the other team's points. So.
And then the last game in Melbourne they played, how was that?
Pretty sad time. I guess I recall my dad being quite emotional. My dad had supported them since he was, you know, his whole life. Exactly right. And so I remember my dad had tears, and so did the other people we were at the game with. We're all members. My dad had been a member for, you know, 15 plus years.
Yeah.
And yeah, so quite emotional time. Yeah, really sad to sort of see something you've grown to know and grown to love just disappear. And I think kids these days would never, well, definitely with the teams they support, would never experience that.
No. And you do think of your team as a constant, don't you? Like these days you'd never think that a team could fold. But I'm sure it was the same then, and you know, it wasn't all that long ago that Melbourne and Hawthorn almost did as well. So it's unbelievable to think of something, you know, that has been around for such a long time since the 1800s that could just go into nothing like that.
And you can't just switch off from that passionate feeling that you have towards the team that you support. And so that's why it did take me a while to sort of settle in on another team to support in the AFL.
Was it weird the next season, like 97, like
I think at that time, obviously,
did it make you disinterested?
No, well, I think because the 7, or was it 9, Fitzroy players went to
still
Brisbane.
There. Yeah, you still had that connection.
Yeah, so there were still the Martin Pikes and the Brad Boyds and Jared Malloy and the like, Chris Johnson, that went to Brisbane Lions. So I still felt a connection with that. We used to go to every home game for the last 2 years of Fitzroy.
Yeah.
So we couldn't go to, we didn't go to any more games of AFL.
Yeah.
So that was strange. But there was still, we could watch, you know, Fitzroy players on TV still. So there was still a bit of love there.
How did it feel when Brisbane did the three-peat? Did you get, was there any sort of, was there anyone left?
No, well, by that stage, Martin Pike Chris Johnson, yeah. So the two of them were still playing. So there was, like, I think, you know, there was still a, you know, I felt a sense of joy, definitely.
But not the same.
Not that same ownership that people feel over their team winning the grand final. Like,
because we do so much.
Well, yeah, exactly right. Yeah. And, you know, if your team wins a grand final, you're hearing about it for weeks and weeks afterwards and from the people who support them. But not in the case with Brisbane. I was happy and loved that, you know, even Alistair Lynch playing well, was an ex-Fitzroy player and things.
Yeah.
Felt nice to see it win, them win, but without the same feeling.
Yeah.
And then eventually you jumped on the Melbourne bandwagon, which seems to be quite light. Well, probably quite light at the time you jumped on.
Yeah, well, look, I was used to following teams that lost lots of games, so I
fit in
beautifully. But a few of my good friends, funnily enough, Kazman and Coops included, all Melbourne supporters, but I used to go as a neutral fan with a few mates for a while, and that was back when Robbo was taking the big screams on the MCG, and I remember just drinking a few soft drinks and screaming his name at the top of my lungs. Robbo!
Yeah, you got to roll the R. Robbo!
And I think through that, I just found a bit of a connection and a want again. I wanted to follow someone again, and Melbourne seemed fitting,
Filling a hole there.
Yes,
a Melbourne-sized hole. Well,
and until last season, it still was a hole because a lot of the games were losses, but...
I know you've come on board at the right time. It's starting to take a good
shift
in the right direction.
Nice. That'd be great.
All right, next question is, what number did you have on your jersey as a kid?
I guess I had if you recall, the Fitzroy player Mark Zanotti.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Zanotti, long, flowing black hair, wore number 16. So I had him when I was really small, really young, back when Nana was knitting me woolen jumpers.
Was it his dirty socks that you got at training?
It was his dirty socks that I received at training. Oh. And I actually, I wore them as my own training socks playing football for many years.
Yeah. Lucky socks.
Until I wore holes in the toes, I wore those socks. And for many seasons, I recall wearing those socks underneath my current team I was playing for, game day socks.
Oh, you're kidding.
So they ended up being my lucky socks.
There you go.
Yeah, so Mark Zanotti... number 16 for Fitzroy.
Carried on.
Yeah. So he retired after 1995. And then I moved on to number one, who was Brad Boyd, the captain. Yeah.
There you go.
Good player too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You still have your Fitzroy jumper?
I have... No, I don't think I do. No, I have the... I still have the one that my nana knitted me, actually. And it would fit a four-year-old boy. Yeah. But no longer myself. It's good. It's a good memory to have. But no, no Fitzroy jumper. I would like to think my dad still has the signed jumper that we got. I think I got a... towards the end, number 12, Matty Primus, signed jumper.
Oh, yeah.
And I think my dad might have that at home. So hopefully he does. And one day it will be my trophy room too.
Nice. Next question was first game you've been to or what year you went to?
Yeah, well, again, my memory for the time is pretty vague, but 1993 was the first game I can recall going to the MCG with my dad and my brother. So we saw Fitzroy play Richmond. And it was back in the days when you can run onto the MCG after the game and kick the football with your family and things. So I recall going to that game. The reason why I remember it, it was obviously another Fitzroy loss, but my brother got lost. And
in the middle of the ground?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
easily done.
If you recall, Everett used to be able to sprint to the middle, and it was kind of a trophy, a badge of honour if you could get there first.
Yeah. Claim the spot.
I used to think I was quite fast, and you know, so I'd dash off, and my younger brother thought he was fast too and try and follow me and get lost in the dust. And so we lost him for 2 hours after the game. We couldn't find him, so I ran back to dad, said I've lost Cade, and then we spent, you know, the next 2 hours policemen looking for him, security guards looking for him. He turned up and he's okay. And
well, he'd just been kicking the ball the whole time,
he just was looking around as well, just we're circling each other on the MCG on all the squared meterage out there.
Good memory. You really figure out how wide those wings are.
It's when you're searching for your brother. And when he was, you know, he would have been, you know, four. What do you, probably 4 or 5 years, sorry.
Yeah, that's memorable. Well, best game you've been to?
Yeah, that was a tough one. A few, obviously. We've all been to a few good games, a few memorable games. I saw Jason Dunstall kick his 1,000th goal.
Oh, wow.
And
oh.
So I ran onto the ground that game. It was at the Gabba against Brisbane Bear. No, would have been Brisbane Lions then. It would have been, let me think what year that would have been. 1995, it would have been Brisbane Bears. Yeah. And so I got on and got to touch his back and pat him on the back after.
Oh, you got in quickly. Oh,
wow. Yeah, got in quickly because it was in our...
So you are quick.
Was that our end? Yeah. Was that our end of the ground? And got in. So that was memorable. Saw Tony Lockett in his prime kick plenty of goals against Fitzroy. my favourite, best game I went to was probably the last win of Fitzroy's. Against Fremantle. I can't recall what we won by, but I do recall my dad driving us in, and we drove the whole way from Bentley to Footscray, where the Witten Oval is, without stopping the car once. So every red light we got to, my dad would just coast into the stop. And if there was cars in front of him, he'd slow down a bit earlier. And so we made it the whole way without stopping. So it was a memorable drive in. And then for us to win, it just cemented it in my memory forever.
Legendary. That's amazing.
Oh, fantastic.
That was a great time. Yeah.
Oh. Nice one. All right. Well, look, I'll get to our question of the day then. For all of us, and I'll include you as well, Murph. Our question of the day was the dorkiest football thing you have done or made. Who wants to coop? Start with
no,
you.
Please. I remember I was thinking about this for a while because I've done plenty of dorky football things. But the one that sticks in my mind was probably when I was about 15, there was like a family fun day for Melbourne at Luna Park. And it was, you know, billed as, you know, parents bring your kids down. So it was for young kids.
Yeah.
And at 15 years old, I thought, what an excellent opportunity to go and meet all the players. And so I was just elbowing 9-year-olds out of the way with my hat, being like, guys, can you sign this? And they were more than happy to, but they were like, you are just the most tragic person. So that was great. I've still got that hat signed by, you know, Trav Johnson and all those guys. And no, it was before that, but who was there? It was just, yeah, Gary Lyon and all them. It was fantastic. Yeah, but very just pathetic. I show people the hat, and I don't tell them how it happened. It's like, yeah, I just got this hat. There's no story behind it at all.
No elbows thrown.
Casman.
Well, I'm thinking of a game where I was umpiring at Wandon. It's a small ground. There's a little hall next door, and my wife is there with a bunch of teenagers. They do a camp and they do a catch up, and for some reason they found out that I was doing the game next door. It just was a coincidence that they were both there. and I was doing the game there. And so they got all the kids who were catching up, and they got them out there, and they, distract me or something, they got them all to cheer while I was umpiring. I'm like, I actually stopped and thought, is this the only time anyone's ever cheered
an umpire?
And it was a weird situation. So yeah, I felt real odd then. Yeah, that's probably the weirdest thing.
Nice. Not too dorky, a bit of a dork.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did it make you did you make your throw-ins better? Or
yeah? Oh, much better, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You just let your blue whistle extra hard.
shoulders back, that's it.
Yeah, I ran backwards much stronger.
That weird backwards run would have just been even more sprightly.
Springy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Nice. Dorkiest thing I've made or done was, and I think it's similar to yours, Murph, I made my own football cards when I was about 7. And I've dug them out. I should have bought them, but maybe I'll put them up on our social media.
Yeah.
I drew... not football cards of players, like I designed new teams, but they weren't like your traditional teams. I chose the most odd places to have teams. Like there was I think I had the Davenport Deers.
That's really
strong.
And the Dimboola Dolphins or the Dimboola Whales, I think, because Tim Watson was from Dimboola. The AFL need a team in Dimboola.
Full of Watsons.
Yeah. And there would have been, there was a Tasmanian, there was another Tasmanian team and a Perth team, I think, as well, because I decided West Coast should probably be called Perth, so I thought that name could be used, so I made that.
The Perth, do you remember what it was? The Perth Panthers?
I'm not sure.
There's a lot of alliteration.
I know there was a bat. There was a team called the Bats as
bats.
Well.
Yeah.
The funniest thing was though, on the back
of the
cards.
They only play night games.
Yeah, great at night. Yeah.
On the back of the cards, I wrote the details of their home grounds. But that was back in the day where you had Cryer Oval and Windy Hill, and the grounds kind of had cool nicknames. So
yeah,
I had Christmas Park, I think, was where the Deers played.
So fitting.
And Deep Cave Park for the Bats. Yeah. Yeah, they had proper funny names as well, so I really tried to put some thought into it. Their pictures are pretty shocking, but I've still got them, so I'll definitely bring them in.
That's amazing that you still have that.
Yeah.
It's, well held on to.
Oh, it's on some nice thick card as well.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah.
What are we talking, half a dozen of these or 12?
Oh, look, there's probably 8 or 9.
Yeah, that's
not too
bad. I mean, that's a lot of stamina.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Then you get out one and be like, this probably is
good. I kept going. There's a Zebra's... I'm sure as well. I'm pretty sure there's a Wombats.
A Wombat, yeah.
No, I'll bring them in and we'll have a good laugh at them. Murph, Dorky's football thing?
Yeah, mine was pretty similar. I thought of a second one too, though. But yeah, I used to create those cards of myself, not of fake teams.
Of real legends.
Mine was me as a 10, 11, 12-year-old local football legend, playing for St. Paul's back then in the juniors. And
did you fudge your stats?
Yeah, well, they're always fantastic
stats. Yeah,
and I was always a few centimetres taller too and a bit lighter. Getting around real well, I was. But I remember I thought of a story too, a dorky story. I remember roughly the same age. I was playing junior football in about, sort of 11 or 12-year-old sort of age. And it's sort of time when you think you're a lot bigger than, in terms of your personality is a lot bigger than you actually are.
Yeah.
And I recall on this particular day, someone had upset me on the field, and I can't recall why, but I remember running past my mum and saying to mum, that guy's a, and using a few expletives to describe this other kid, and remembering that I'm 12, so I'm talking to my mum saying these words. I think I used the F and the C words.
Yeah, ooh. Yeah.
Because I was a bit heated and a bit angry at the time, and but I'm thinking that I'm just talking tough.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
I recall after the game, my mum talked tough back to me, and I spent the rest of the afternoon in my room crying. So it was it's a pretty vivid memory of a time that I was a bit thought I was a bit tougher than I was. So a bit talky all the same.
Yeah.
Nice.
Love it.
Very nice. All right, well, let's start talking about the 1898 season as it was.
Absolutely. Well, should we start with a little bit of history of the year?
Yes, all right. So please. Things that happened in 1898. Thank you for reminding me, Charlie.
Now, this could be a good time for some kind of soundbite that we've prepared.
Oh, please.
So it's something to do with give us some history. Let's see if I've got the right one here.
Give us some history. There we go.
I will.
All right, Charlie, what do you got?
So notable events in 1898... On January 1st of 1898, New York annexed land from the surrounding counties, creating the greater city of New York as the world's second largest city, and that was when it was geographically divided into the 5 boroughs of Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, and Staten Island.
Nice.
Also, in March, Robert Allison became the first person to buy an American-built automobile when he bought a Winton automobile advertised in the Scientific American.
Also that year, the first car accident happened as well.
The first fatality. Yes. Fatality. Yes.
Yeah.
The electric car went out, got out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I heard the same one. Yeah. The first fatality in a car.
Wow.
So there you go.
Yeah.
And on later in the year, the Treaty of Paris was signed, ending the Spanish-American War.
Yeah, which was also declared that year as well.
Yes. So good year.
Yeah,
good year for wars.
USA also annexed Hawaii. So
yes. And then
took Hawaii.
Like the push in the back, took it back. I'm assuming?
Well, annex means they took it. It became part of America.
Ah.
Yeah.
I thought it was the other way around.
No, yeah, annex sounds like, yeah, it's separate.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Annex,
yeah.
Took it over.
And one other thing I had was in June, William Ramsay and Maurice Travers discovered neon in their laboratory at the University College of London after extracting it from liquid nitrogen.
Interesting you talk about science, because it was the same year Marie Curie discovered radium.
Ah.
Yeah.
Good lady, Matt Murray.
Yeah, a few other bits and pieces I saw. A Shroud of Turin image was discovered that...
Oh yeah,
the picture of Jesus in that he was supposedly wrapped in that cloak.
There
you go. China leased Hong Kong to Britain for 99 years, starting in 1898.
Good deal. Good deal for Britain, I reckon.
Right.
The Constitution draft referendum was not passed by New South Wales, so we were still Australia was still a colony at this stage as well. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
More years. And the song of the year was George W. Johnson's "A Laughing Song."
Oh, that's one of your faves, isn't it, Murph?
It's a great song.
Yeah.
Really.
How does it go again?
It's a good hummer. No lyrics.
Just laughing.
It was. I recall it vividly.
And then I've got... Do you have any more facts? Or I've got a few births in the year.
No, you give us some births.
So births... Bertolt Brecht was born in 1898.
Mm.
Enzo Ferrari was also born in 1898.
Wow.
Peggy Guggenheim, the American art collector... And George Gershwin, the American composer, was also born in 1898. There were plenty of others, but those were the ones that sort of popped out to me.
Fantastic. All right. And let's talk about the football season then. So there are a few new things that happened this season. The Dawson Whiskey Company decided they wanted to present a £50 trophy to the Premier of the Year. So the league instituted a trophy. Which is completely different from the current Premiership Cup.
Yeah.
But they did have a trophy that year.
First alcoholic sponsors of the football.
First alcoholic sponsors. The games were still played 20 a side at this stage. So if you were injured, you could go out, take yourself off, get fixed up, and come back on whenever you wanted.
Yep.
There was no interchange rules really then.
Mm.
Soldiers fighting in the Boer War were playing football behind the enemy lines in their off time. And umpires were banned from playing.
Ah, as you can.
So umpires,
as we said in the VFA, the teams picked umpires from their own teams, didn't they?
Yeah, so kind of.
That kind.
But
that,
the I think there was a situation where the umpires had played the previous day in the VFA for like Port Melbourne or something. Then they umpired the next day, so they couldn't kind of double dip. So
yeah,
it was outlawed in 1898.
There you go. So they were first sort of proper umpires,
the
men who started UCAS.
That's right.
Is that an ad, Matt, therefore?
Yeah, I was wondering why that would have been the case. Wouldn't it have been useful to have an umpire umpiring who was current in the game and understood the game? I wonder, you know, whether having a VFA player umpiring a VFL game was tremendously bad.
Potentially quite a
maybe they were
decision.
A bit, you know, territorial, especially after the fact that they'd only split the year before. Yeah, they didn't want any VFA players involved in, you know, the league.
We're still a bit of breakup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They need a bit more time to get over
No one ever wants to talk to their ex.
No. Spend a bit more time listening to Boys to Men in the Dark, you know, all that sort of stuff.
You're talking Richard Mercer, aren't you?
Well, the way we do this, Murph, is we just go through it team by team and in alphabetical order at the moment. We may change that at some stage, but at the moment we go through alphabetically. So the first team we'll talk about very quickly is Carlton. And if you remember last year, Carlton had only won the two games for the season and finished seventh.
Mm.
So the only team they beat was St Kilda.
Mm, they started off with a strong win though this season.
They did, and it was a win against a team that wasn't St Kilda.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good start.
Yeah, they beat South Melbourne. And that was the only team they didn't beat that wasn't St Kilda that they beat for the whole year.
Oh, so they had the three wins?
They had three wins and a draw.
And a draw, yes.
Mm.
And they drew in round seven with... Melbourne.
Melbourne.
Ah, Melbourne.
Wait, did you say it was a draw?
I did say it was a draw.
I've got a soundbite regarding to this.
Okay.
It's a draw, both the teams are even.
both the teams were even. So the score in that, I mean, Melbourne really should have won that game. It was 3-10 to 4-4. So Melbourne's fault for losing that. Yeah, so they were the only two real things I could find out about Carlton that year. They finished 7th on the ladder. They won 3 games, lost 10 and drew 1, and finished 7th with a percentage of 60.3%. So, you know, another poor year for Carlton in 1898.
But you could say they butchered it.
You could say they butchered it.
Oh.
What a zinger. But remember, Carlton were coming off quite quite a poor few seasons as well. So they were down in the dumps here. Next team alphabetically is Collingwood. And I've got a lot more to talk about for Collingwood because they finished 2nd.
Yeah, it'd be fair to say that we didn't quite talk as much about Collingwood as we probably could have recently. So, but you know, we've got a few things to say probably easily about Collingwood, particularly this season, couldn't we? With Dick Condon won the
player of the champion of the colony,
The obviously the predecessor to the Brownlow. So yeah.
So. Some of the interesting things I found about Collingwood was they played Fitzroy in round 9, and there was quite a big rivalry with Fitzroy and Collingwood because they were so close to each other in proximity that the Collingwood Council offered a £20 incentive for each player if they won the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So they were getting paid about £2 a game.
Yeah.
As we heard from the story earlier.
Yeah.
So £20, they're times you by 10. That's easy maths, right?
It's also a big jump from what they're
getting.
Isn't it? So that's a huge incentive to win. And it was a really close game for most of the day, but the Pies ended up winning, so they got that incentive.
Isn't it interesting to think that that rivalry is, you know, was there from such an early day? Like, these are the days that those were created.
Yeah.
That there's the reason why, because of the proximity.
Yeah, absolutely, because it was...
They were stealing each other's supporters.
Yeah, absolutely. So they all got their money, but I think the league kind of frowned on this. They weren't happy with the payment, so
fair enough.
It was kind of frowned upon and they didn't really do it again. It was interesting to see that Collingwood also won 9 games in a row. So from round 9 up until the semi-final, they won 9 games in a row. So had quite a good season in that respect, but...
Finished off strong.
It was round 7 when they started getting paid per game, was it, do you think?
Round 7.
Yeah, since you started.
It says with Collingwood that the Collingwood Council actually had promised its players $10 each if they won.
It was actually £20.
So there you go. That's different to that.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but
that does say $10, but I found it was actually £20.
Oh yeah.
So they won 9 games in a row up until the semi-final. So the semi-final was played against Fitzroy that year, and they did an interesting thing in the final. They decided to wear all black socks. The whole reason, maybe it was because that it was a mark of disrespect towards Fitzroy. Maybe they were trying to suck them out.
Changing the colour of the socks.
Well, I know in the NBA sometimes teams will wear all black to games, and that's kind of like we're going to a funeral
because
we're going to lose.
Murder you.
Yeah. So it might have been along those lines early in the 1898. It didn't work for them, obviously. They lost that game because Collingwood wore the white and black stripes, which they still do.
I was thinking they just wore all black now.
Right, so maybe, so then they used to wear white and black stripes, but it changed to all black.
Interesting that they thought that changing from the black and white hoops to an all black sock
is going to psych you out.
It's
a really weak minded individual that's getting. Isn't it?
Thinking of 120 years ago, very interesting.
Yeah.
The other fun fact I found that there was they had 2 rep games that year, both against the Ballarat League,
which is who they played in the year before. Also,
yeah, and lost.
So they had the one game that first year.
But when the Ballarat team came to play in Melbourne, and every team had a player represented except for Collingwood. So what Collingwood did is they took their whole team to Ballarat and played one of the local Ballarat leagues in their week off.
Because we're in the week of that game.
Yeah.
So just to stick it up them.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Sounds like a very Eddie McGuire thing to do.
Only team that wasn't represented was Collingwood.
Which is funny because they had the champion of the colony and the leading goal kicker.
And they finished 2nd on the ladder.
Yeah, so how did they not have a rep team?
Yeah.
A representative in that team.
Do you think
the champion team.
More of that story? Yeah, or were more people catching wind of what the council were trying to do in terms of incentives?
Yeah, maybe it was a sort of a...
Maybe.
And it was frowned upon at those times. Yeah.
Maybe it was a bit of a slap on the wrist. So, yeah, and... in that those 2 rep matches, it ended up being a draw. One team won one, and the other won the other.
Yeah,
Ballarat won at home, and the VFL won at home as well.
Yeah. Yeah, quite interesting, yeah. though, the fact that they played against Ballarat, and that would have been... It sounds like it's a good rivalry at the moment.
Yeah.
Back then.
Yeah, it seems to be. Well, obviously, I don't have any of the stats, but they must have got a few people around it. It's sort of almost the original State of Origin type thing.
Yeah, real precursor to that.
Yeah.
But they still, I mean, Murphy, you've played lots of football for local suburban teams. They have rep games, don't they? League versus league.
Yeah, still interleague around Easter time each year. Every competition... I would like to say every competition.
You played a few of those?
Put a representative side together. Unfortunately not, no. No, I didn't. Selected for one once many years ago and was unable to play, I think, through injury and stuff. So never played a rep game, no. But leagues still do that. It's not quite with the same enthusiasm and gusto as what a State of Origin type thing is. Because normally they're playing leagues that are on the other side of the states and you don't know those players or that competition, so it's just more of a... A novelty
pride?
Thing about getting selected, I think, now more than the a rivalry game. Type thing. Yeah.
So Collingwood finished second that year. They had 10 wins, 4 losses, and a very healthy percentage of 181%.
Very healthy.
Very healthy. Mm. Let's move on to the same olds. Same olds being who, Murph?
Same olds, Essendon?
Correct.
Well played.
So if you remember, Essendon won the premiership in 1897 by winning the three finals games,
the round robin.
Yes, so they finished first, and one of the first things that happened that season was league chairman A.H. Shaw presented premiership caps to Essendon at their home ground at the East Melbourne Cricket Ground. So premiership caps instead of medals back then.
A bit
like your baggy green, I guess.
Yeah,
but special premiership caps.
Did you say that happened at round one? Did you say that happened?
I think it was pre round one.
Oh, okay.
It says March 18th. 1898.
Yes, that's like 2 months before because the season started in May.
Yeah,
there you go. Okay.
Essendon had a very good start to the year. They won their first 5 games. So against Fitzroy, St Kilda, Carlton, South Melbourne, and the Demons, or the Fuchsias, I should say. they played St Kilda in one round and had a really weakened team and were missing quite a few of their good players and still managed to kick 7 goals straight in the first half to beat St Kilda 71-15.
They're having a lot of trouble.
The media at the time also were very impressed with the play Essendon was doing. They had sort of, I guess, brought a new style to the league. They're playing very openly, no kick and hope football, like actually kicking to someone, and lots of handball, lots of run through the middle.
Lots of run and carry.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're seeing a lot of that still now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It says in the game, Eddie James kicks 7 goals and Firth McCallum goals after eluding 12 opponents. As Geelong beat.
That's a Geelong.
So go, that's Geelong. Me. Oh, no. Can I edit that out?
I hope so.
Classic Casman.
Classic.
I tried to double check.
If we get
it.
Through one episode where you don't say, can I edit that out? It'll be amazing.
I look forward to hearing it one day.
It's getting hotter in here.
And Essendon champion Albert Thurgood. Oh, my God, he's Thurgood. He tried to come back in July, but it was blocked by the league because he only wanted to come back to Essendon. They had some kind of residency rule there, so he was banned for 12 weeks and couldn't actually play in the league in 1898 because he was working in the Kalgoorlie minefields.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he came back, wanted to play for the Bombers, didn't want to play for anyone else, but the league blocked him. They wouldn't let him.
Had he played for them previously?
He had, but because he had to have lived, I think they must have had a rule, you have to
have to live in the place.
In Melbourne or Essendon
for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, he wasn't able.
And he didn't want to play for anyone else.
Well, supposedly he could have walked into any other team if he wanted to. So maybe it was a league just saying, well, Essendon's won the premiership. We don't want them any stronger.
Come on.
You're fine.
Yeah.
You can't play. So Essendon finished on top with 11 wins, 3 losses, and a record percentage of 202.1%.
Amazing. There's an interesting stat about one of the Essendon players I have here. I'm sure you've heard it as well, Tim, about Corey Gardner.
No.
So he also played for the Melbourne Football Club afterwards. In fact, the next year he played for Melbourne from 1900 to 03. He represented Australia in the hurdles and the long jump at the 1904 Summer Olympics. And he won the Australian Amateur Athletics Hurdle Championship in 1898. So he's just bounding over players.
Bounding
That's probably
players.
How he won it. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to your team, Murph, Fitzroy.
Fitzroy, great.
Known then as the...
Maroons.
Correct. So Fitzroy weren't really expected to have a great season to start with. They had a lot of veterans and their older players retire. So the team had a really young feel for the 1898 season. and they really focused on their fitness as well, from what I've read.
Mm.
So they really wanted to get fit and come out firing. In round one, they was having some internal issues, and Mick Grace and Sam McMichael didn't play, and Essendon absolutely smashed them by 53 points.
They had two sets of brothers playing in their team as well, Fitzroy. They had the Grace brothers, Jim and Mick, but they also had the Daltons.
The Daltons.
Bill and Jack.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mm. So in round 7, 8, 9, Fitzroy lost 3 in a row and weren't looking great.
Bit bleak, yeah.
But from that point on, they played Essendon again in that last round. They played Essendon again in that sort of sequence of games and got thumped again by 43 points. They lost the following week to Collingwood, and that's when Collingwood started their 9-game in a row undefeated run.
Yes.
But from round 10 onwards, Fitzroy didn't lose for the rest of the season. They had a 10-game winning streak.
And it
kind of reminded me a bit of the 2001 season. Well, if you remember Brisbane Lions were... They were doing all right, but not so much.
Yeah, they were sort of...
They came up against the Bombers in the If It Bleeds, We Can Kill It game, and I don't think they lost again for the rest of the season after that.
Which was about halfway through, just past halfway, maybe around 15.
Yeah, around June-ish, if I remember. Mm. Yeah, so that really reminded me of that season, that there must have been a spark there that made them really click together.
Bit of a hunger.
Yeah. And then they didn't lose for the rest of the season.
It's certainly a good run home, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, they came up against St Kilda in round 10. That would have given them a fair bit of confidence.
Good confidence builder, yep. wasn't an easy win, though. St Kilda still scored 3-1 that game, which is...
Ho-ho.
Quite big for them.
Which is reaching their average score, and they're playing against a good team.
Their average score. That's terrible, isn't it? The only other thing I had here was in the finals, in week one of the finals, Jim Grace, one of their star players, almost lost them a game by giving away a free for arguing with the man on the mark. But Mick Grace, who was playing with a head in a bandage because he'd had an abscess removed from his tooth, saved the game. So I took charge and pulled him back from then on.
Just on that, though, does it make you think about how good the dentistry was back then? Sort of guy, and the sort of tools they were using?
Whole head bandage.
Oh, I'm picturing him. That.
Really, wooden tools.
Yeah.
Not chisel in the mouth.
Oof. Not what you want.
So Fitzroy that year finished third in the ladder with 10 wins, 4 losses, and a percentage of 121.6. Kaz, I might let you talk about Geelong.
Okay.
You had some information about maybe Teddy Rankin.
Did I?
Or Henry Tracker Young.
Oh, that was from the last episode, wasn't it? I haven't got it ready right
the
now.
The guy had the bounces.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Talk amongst yourselves while I get myself ready here.
No, so if you remember the season before, Geelong had finished on top of the ladder with, I think they won 11 games and lost their first three and then won 11.
And then won all the, because they hadn't ever played together before.
Yes.
Mm. And
so coming off a great year.
Yeah, and they only missed out on the premiership because they lost to Essendon in the first round of the round robin. They won their other two games.
Yeah. Yeah, but from the start of the season, one of their stars, Teddy Rankin, missed the whole season because he had typhoid.
Ooh. I mean, that's not happening anymore.
Tuberculosis.
Luckily.
And another player, Henry Tracker Young, also missed the whole season with a fractured bone in his ankle. So two of their stars were already missing from pretty early on in the season.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Always hard to get past.
Yeah.
Especially when you've got 20 players on the field. It's hard to get that depth, isn't it?
Certainly is. So, Kaz, Eddie James?
This is the thing I brought up before, actually. Yeah, so Eddie James kicks 7 goals and Firth McCallum goals after eluding 12 opponents as Geelong beat St Kilda 11-19, 85 to 2-5-17. Yeah, that was why I brought that up back in round 2, because you were talking about how they got St Kilda absolutely got destroyed.
Mauled.
Yes, and so,
things like that.
Could you imagine how much we'd cheer these days if someone eluded 12 opponents?
The entire
That's still
field.
Woden.
Are you going to talk about him a little bit longer?
Well, I'm happy to, yes, because that was one thing that absolutely stuck out to me about the season was, he ran the entire field and eluded 12 players.
Which is more than half of the team.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Just got through them all.
How do you get through that distance, that many men, with the ball in your hand the whole way? It's a phenomenal feat.
So I've got a bit of information about Firth. It was hard to get too much, but he played from Geelong. It started in 1897 in their opening year and played through to 1903 and then missed 1904 and came back in 1905. He only kicked 25 goals, even though he was a centreman and a centre-half forward and a half-forward flanker. It says in here he had a touch of brilliance. He had a crouch running style and was very resourceful, but at times suffered from poor health. And then it says in 1898 he ran the length of the field and eluded 12 players to score a goal. He was never a robust player and was regarded as one of the best half dozen players in the competition in 1899 and played for Victoria against South Australia twice.
Mm. You don't get many Firths around these days.
No, it's
a
great name, isn't it?
Firth. It's a great name.
Can I add one more little point to that amazing run of eluding 12 players? Can you just for a second visualise and picture where his teammates were?
Yeah.
and think about, was there a moment in that distance he's covered, was there a single moment where he could have given that ball off?
Yeah, selfish.
What were the other 16, 17 men doing?
Imagine, it would be great to have footage from that. Yeah, just waiting. But that was after that brilliance, that was the only goal he kicked for that game, and Eddie James ended up kicking 7. Which is an unbelievable feat, considering that Geelong only kicked 11 for the game. Yeah. So he kicked 7 of 11 goals.
Fantastic. All right, well, Geelong finished 4th that year with 9 wins, 5 losses, and a percentage of 151%. And then on to the Fuchsias.
The Fuchsias.
Murph, who are the Fuchsias?
Yeah. Melbourne.
Correct.
Yes, well played.
Long-time listener.
Yeah. Captained by Ned Sutton that year, same as 1897, and vice-captained by George Moisey. Old Moisey.
Yeah,
that's a cool last name.
Interesting to see that the Demons won their first 3 and then lost their next 3 and then won their next 2. So they were 5-3 kind of halfway through the season, but that was about it.
Mm. Which, you know, is about where, we imagine Melbourne sit. Well, just constantly keeping us on the verge of being happy, but then ended up disappointing.
Well, even 2017 wasn't the same. We started so well, we're picturing finals.
Then we sort of flail,
and then slowly die. What they said in the media was it was this inconsistency cost them.
Well, isn't that interesting?
They couldn't find their best team, but they did unearth some really good juniors, including Vic Cumberland.
Oh, yes.
Who are going to be one of their stars. But some good young ones done. Another interesting yet sad fact I found. One of their players, Jack Leith. Mm-hmm. He missed the only game he missed in 2 seasons, he missed because his child died on game day. But he played the next week.
He was all leading, resilient.
He was the leading goal kicker the year before.
Jack
and,
Leith.
Yeah, and the year after. Thanks. Yeah, so... dominant
for Melbourne, yes.
Mm. Yeah, so that was a big loss. Well done, Kaz. Good research.
I'm shaming myself.
And in June, there was an old players kind of comedy game that happened between Essendon and Melbourne to raise money, in which the D's won 5-1-31 to Essendon 2-8-20.
Really?
Oh, yeah, so I guess the first of those charity matches that I've really heard about. That was the only...
Probably not all mic'd up on the field, I can't imagine at that stage.
No, not at all.
No. So even charity matches have history that far back.
So D's finished 6th, 5 wins, 8 losses, and 97% percentage. Mm. St Kilda. Poor St Kilda.
Much to say.
I've got a little bit, because one of the things we decided to do this episode was choose a kind of player that stood out to us from the season. Charlie spoke about Firth for Callum. Kaz is going to talk about Dick Condon a bit when we talk about the champion of the colony.
Yep.
Murphy might talk about some Fitzroy players when we get to the finals. But I picked out a St Kilda player. So I wanted to focus... So look, St Kilda, again, they didn't win a game. In round 5, they played South Melbourne, and with the first time they scored a goal against South Melbourne, took them 11 quarters to score a goal against South Melbourne.
Good on
them. That must have been great.
Yeah.
There's improvement.
11 quarters. Yeah. So I was going to talk about the player Andrew T.H. Nixie Stewart. So Nixie Stewart, he played 15 games for the season. He made his debut at age 21 in round 3 against Fitzroy and played the rest of the year. He led the Saints in goal kicking and finished the season with 23, which when I crunched the numbers was 41% of the total goals for the whole team.
Wow.
Yeah, for the whole season. That's a cool stat. So they didn't win a game. They only kicked 56 goals for the whole season, the team, and he kicked 23 of those. Both his brothers, George and Walter, also played for the Saints. He kicked goals in 12 of the 15 games of the season, and in round 9 against Geelong, he scored all 4 of the Saints' goals. His biggest haul was 4 goals, He kicked six goals throughout the finals and finished third in the league's goal-kicking tally, trailing Smith of Collingwood, who led the league with 31. So kind of reminded me of a player, kind of, I guess, like Ben Brown or one of those forwards who plays for a team that's not doing so well but is still able to be a bit of a focal point. And yeah. So, you know, some happy things for St Kilda. He was a young player coming through and I guess a player people could watch and enjoy watching as well.
I've got something with Joe Hogan, who was a star of the team that year, who was a defender, and he was the grandest high marker of the year that year.
Wow, yeah, so the grandest high marker.
So, grandest. As you were just saying, Stuart kicked the most goals for St Kilda.
Yeah.
Yes, with 23.
23.
I just looked up. The next closest is Joe Hogan, who kicked 4.
Yeah, there you go.
For the season.
Yeah, for the season.
Wow. I mean, he was a defender. He's obviously gone up forward as well.
Yeah.
I like that term, though. What was it again?
Grandest.
Grandest high marker.
The grandest high marker. The here he comes. And the, look at him fly.
Stabbing, kicking, high marking.
So St Kilda back. Finished 8th. No wins. 14 losses. Percentage of 33.5.
Yeah, shocker. Shocker.
South Melbourne. They finished 5th again. So if you remember last season, they missed out in the finals.
Because of that.
Fifth.
Because of losing to Fitzroy.
They had a draw.
Draw with Fitzroy
yeah. Mm. The only interesting piece of information I could really find out about South Melbourne that year was they had a player called Henry Ginaret, who was a Swiss-born player who was a winger. What he lacked in pace, he made up for in marking and expert handling. But just interesting to note that there were overseas players and international players.
Yeah, joining
players
in at that stage.
Back at that stage. So.
Yeah, there was someone I saw who was playing in 1898. I can't remember who was playing for, with the name Valori. So I was sort of, yeah, there's obviously even then... migrants and things are sort of getting involved in the game, which
Absolutely.
Is great.
Mm. So South Melbourne lost their first 3, won their next 5, and then kind of went on a few runs and lost their next 3, won their next 2. So up and down.
Yeah, the leading goal kicker for the year for South Melbourne was Charlie Colgan, who kicked 13 goals, and then Tom Gilligan kicked 12 as well, so they were pretty close. Old Gilly.
Nice, and that brings us to the finals. Now, if you remember what happened in 1897, the finals was played as a round robin. But there was a lot of criticism to that.
I'm not surprised.
because of the, I guess, the way it happened. And one of the reasons...
Geelong would have been spewing.
Yeah, but one of the reasons they broke away the form of VFL was because they wanted to have finals and these exciting games at the end of the season, not just have the top team win. So they rejigged the finals this year, and I don't know if it was better or worse, but what they decided was that everyone made finals. You get finals, and St Kilda get finals, and Carlton get finals. Saints didn't win a game. You get finals. So they split the ladder in half. So they said everyone who's first, third, fifth, and seventh are pool A, and then everyone who's second, fourth, sixth, and eighth, you're pool B. And they played a mini round robin against each other. And then at the end, there'd be two ladders that had formed from that. The best two teams
on the ladders would then play in the...
Yeah, but here's the kicker. If the best team after those round robins wasn't the team that finished on top, and that team had won 2 games at least, then they had the right to challenge the winner of the pool games.
Of their own pool again.
The winner. So I guess we'll have to go through the finals for me to explain this and make sense.
It kind of makes sense, but yeah.
So end of the home and away season, the ladder was Essendon, Collingwood, Fitzroy, Geelong, South Melbourne, Melbourne, Carlton, St Kilda.
Yep.
So then they had 3 weeks of finals in which they drew up 2 pools. So section A was Fitzroy, Essendon, South Melbourne and Carlton. So they played each other once. And the other section was Collingwood, Geelong, Melbourne, St Kilda, and they all played each other once.
Yep.
That's really a spread from and the selection of the that last spot on the ladder there.
It is.
They're in the middle.
So looking at these finals, so there were 3 weeks of what was called sectional finals then. And looking at the scores, I mean, round one, the lowest score was 12 points, but it was, 67 points, 76 points, 12 points, and 62 points.
So the first section of the finals.
The first sectional round.
First sectional round in round one.
Yeah.
I've got here that the lowest score was 8 points. Carlton kicked 1-2.
Yeah, 1-2. So, but the margin was 67 points.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
So, sorry, I was talking about the margin.
The margin.
So if you look at all the margins here, I worked it out, did some crunching of the calculator again. The average margin for the 3 sectional finals was 39.5. points per game. So, I mean, not really the spectacle the league was probably looking for. These are all massive blowouts.
They're all one-sided.
And that's going to happen when you've got St Kilda, who haven't won a game. Yeah, Carlton, who've only beaten two teams.
Yeah, Collingwood against St Kilda in that round was 14 goals, 19.
Yeah, some big scores. Like that one game you mentioned, Tim, South Melbourne for Troy was quite close. But the other three games would have been extremely slow viewing.
Imagine. Yeah. Mm. St Kilda Collingwood, 27-103. That's not a fun day out for anyone.
No. Hey, but St Kilda played finals.
Yeah, good on them. Do you think it's because people wanted to play on the junction in finals? Just continuing that thing of, you know, they're only in it for the ground?
Yeah, possibly. Well,
I've heard stranger things.
It's funny you say that because you said money, that's where the grand final was played.
Isn't that interesting?
We'll talk about that in a minute. So at the end of those three sectional finals, Fitzroy were on top of Section A with 3 wins, and Collingwood was on top of Section B with 3 wins. So they played a semi-final, and that semi-final was played, you know, week 4 of the finals.
Yep.
And that was a pretty low-scoring affair. It was Fitzroy 210-22 defeating Collingwood 105-11.
They really don't know how to kick straight.
Really not a great score, is it?
Do they?
But because Essendon had finished on top of the ladder, and because they had won at least 2 games, they had the right to challenge. And so the VFL stipulated that the top 10 couldn't just rest their players for 3 weeks. They had to earn at least 8 points throughout the finals to have the right to challenge.
Yep.
Otherwise, you'd rest, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
You wouldn't play your good players. You'd rest them, and then you'd...
This is starting to make sense now. So when you were saying it before, I thought you meant the top two players in the top two teams in each section then played against each other for a spot in the grand final. But no, so only the top team in each section played in the semi-final.
Yes.
There you go.
So if Essendon hadn't challenged, it would have been automatically a Collingwood Fitzroy grand final after that section.
But of course you'd challenge.
Yeah, it'd be mad not to.
I was just thinking, it's kind of similar to the final eight now, where the top four teams get a double chance.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the 1898 version of a double chance, isn't it?
I guess so. But it rewards you for finishing on top.
Because you guys were the minor premiers. Essendon were the minor premiers. Yeah, of course.
So if it had been in place the year before, then Geelong would have had the right to challenge Essendon the week after, but that wasn't there.
And that was a ridiculous round robin. But anyway,
it was.
Yeah.
So the finals went to week 5.
Yes, good. Suck more out. Excellent.
In which Fitzroy played Essendon.
And it's interesting to note that the crowds are continuing to grow from season to season. Last, in 1897, I believe the biggest crowd was about 10,000 in round 3.
Yep.
Here, for the grand final, you've got 16,500 at Junction Oval.
And on that point, and I did some research too and recognised that was the crowd at this game. At the time, in Melbourne, so the whole of Melbourne City, the population was 458,000 people in Melbourne.
Isn't that amazing?
So 16,500 went to that grand final. So on the crunching of the numbers, Tim, like you were saying before, 4.5%
of the entire
Melbourne's population went to this game.
Amazing.
And in comparison to that in today's, probably today's population,
how many people would have to cram into the MCG?
Melbourne now has 4.5 million people, and if the same percentage, so if 16,500 people went to a game, it's only 0.09% or something of the population. So the comparison, I think,
is huge.
It's still low percentage numbers, but such a huge amount of the population of the city went to that game.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? That's really interesting. I didn't sort of think about it in those terms. You know?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But there was quite a kickback about the grand final. They couldn't decide where to play the game. So three teams put in... So Essendon and Fitzroy put in submissions of three ovals they wanted to play at. So Brunswick Street Oval, East Melbourne Cricket Ground and Lakeside Oval. But the league thought, no, we'll play at Junction Oval.
Yep.
That's why St Kilda's in the league. We've got Junction Oval.
Yeah, we've got it.
But the problem was Junction Oval was ready for cricket.
Yes, of course.
They hadn't played a game there in 3 weeks. They were getting the ground ready for the cricket season, so nothing was ready. So Essendon refused for days and days and days, and it wasn't actually until the night before that the league finally convinced Essendon to play the grand final. Otherwise, they were just going to forfeit the premiership. And so they said... One of the stats I've got here is that they took 40 dray loads of rubbish and soil and street takings off the ground for the game to be played.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
and it was played at 2:50 p.m.
It was, so on a bright, sunshiny day with a small gust of wind.
Basically the same time that it's played.
Still time it is now, yeah, correct, yeah.
Yep. So, quite a good game from what I've heard. Yes, Murph?
I'm just crunching some numbers again, Tim, and I just thought about in following on from what Coop said about what would that look like today in terms of the crowd.
Yeah.
And I haven't quite got to the final figure yet, but for 6,500 people going to an 1898 grand final, it will be somewhere in today's figures. It will be somewhere in the vicinity of 300,000 people.
Amazing.
So 300 and I think I'll give you an exact figure soon, but it'll be about 320,000 people going to a grand final in 2017.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
So, the grand final was quite the spectacle. And one thing we should say, this was the very first grand final as well.
Yeah, actual grand final, which is, you know, exciting.
Yeah, it's to decide the best team of the season. Mm. Fitzroy played quite well. They had a lot of their players seemed to be involved really early, especially Mick Grace, who, Kaz, I know you're a bit of a fan of.
Well, they started very strong, didn't they? Yeah,
they did. They came out firing. Mick Grace was taking big marks all over the place. They had their captain running through. McSpearin scored one of the goals, I think, for Fitzroy as well.
Yes, McSpearin got one, and McDougall got another.
Yep, and yeah, they were really all over the Bombers, all the same olds to start with. Their captain at the time was Sloan. Murph, you were going to talk a little bit about...
Yeah, Alex Sloan for Fitzroy, yeah. So he captained Fitzroy from 1898, this in the year we're talking about now, until 1900. And at the time, like I mentioned, was captaining, but it was described here in the book that I've been reading about Fitzroy, that in the semi-final against Collingwood, it was described, Alex Sloan was described as being like an avalanche in the win. His dashes with the ball were single-handedly winning the game for Fitzroy. So just a bit of perspective on the type of man that he was, but also goes on to say that Alex Sloan captained the team with great ability, and to have a man with such loyalty to carry out instructions was unheard of at this time. So I guess it's sort of...
Played a captain's game,
and it talks a bit about the man, I guess, and the sort of leadership skills that he must have held in that period. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So one of the other things I saw about this game was just Fitzroy's defenders just stood tall. They were punching everything. They were getting involved, even spoiling their own men. But they were just rock solid in defence and much better armed to take on the Essendon forwards. And Essendon just tried time and time again to get the ball forward and rush it forward and score, and they couldn't get through Fitzroy's wall.
Mm. Jim Grace was one of the best players in the win over Essendon. He kicked a goal after making a kick from his brother in the first quarter. Pass from Drowen in the second quarter led to his second and the team's third goal.
Yep. So it should be noted, Essendon had scored 3 goals up until half time, and that was all the goals they scored.
Yeah. I like the idea of these Grace brothers. They sounded, from all the reading that we've all done, they sounded like very dominant, very prominent players, not only for Fitzroy, but in the whole competition too.
And able to find each other quite well.
Mm. Obviously, yeah, looked for each other and knowing, you know, maybe knowing that they could rely on each other for scoring the goals and doing the things that Fitzroy needed to be winning games.
Yep. Absolutely. Taking charge. And from all accounts, Mick Grace was the best on field that day. He would have won the Norm Smith had that been a medal at the time.
Interesting to think that Essendon actually should have had the wood over Fitzroy because they beat them both times they played that season.
Yeah, but Fitzroy had beat them in the sectional finals.
Yes, but during the main season, they beat them by 53 points in round 1 and 43 points in round 8. Absolutely.
Maybe in the grand final, Fitzroy changed their socks to black.
Ah, maybe that's what it is.
Or dark maroon.
Yeah, a very dark maroon.
The umpire in the grand final as well, Kaz.
Yeah, something
about his name?
I checked this, but he had a nickname, Ivo, and surname Crap. It says his first name was Henry, and they nicknamed him Ivo Crap.
Oh, his nickname.
Yeah. Ah, which is even better, actually. That's awesome. That's great.
Henry Crap.
Umpire Crap.
Umpire Crap.
Umpire Crap.
Who umpired a wise and fair game from all reports?
That's crap. That's crap.
Sounds like a load of it.
So both teams weren't able to score goals. Oh, sorry, Fitzroy scored a goal in the third quarter, but that was the only goal scored for the whole second half of the game. So it was quite a tough one, but they're... their defence really won the game for them, from what I could see. And it was like one of those normal grand finals where you can tell it's over at a certain point, and the crowd kind of lost interest, but you know, everyone else was, like, the Fitzroy players were pumped. And
another thing about Mick Grace, it says here in an article, Essendon were further demoralised later in the game when Fitzroy champion forward and follower Mick Grace, renowned for his marking skill and kicking prowess, flew high over a pack to take a spectacular high mark and kicked a long-range goal.
And then all his comrades rushed over to shake his hands as he'd scored that as well.
Yeah.
What I got. Instead of high fives, well done, old chap.
Yeah,
well done.
Congratulations. Hands, what a bully goal.
Tip of that to you, sir.
Yeah. So that game was pretty much dominated by Fitzroy. They won that game 5-8-38 to Essendon 3-5-23, taking home the very first premiership from a grand final.
Yeah, which is... you know, a huge deal.
Significant moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Very much so. So that gets us to the end of the 1898 season. Following that win, the Fitzroy president, the Honourable R.W. Best, tenders that the team should have a smoke night on a Monday night of next in honour of this achievement.
So the original Mad Monday.
The original Mad Monday.
Unbelievable.
So dinner at Fitzroy Town Hall, and each player received their premiership cap as well.
So still caps at this stage, not medals.
Still caps, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
So the awards that we have here for the year, obviously the premiership team was Fitzroy. The wooden spoon went to St Kilda again. And the leading goal kicker for the VFL was Archie Smith of Collingwood with 31 goals.
Champion of the colony, Kaz?
Yes, Richard Dick Condon.
Yeah, Dick Condon with his 50 pounds.
And you want to talk a bit about Dick Condon?
Look, I've got something here about him. And now they've labelled him enigmatic, and I think we all know what that means. You know, he was a bit of a lad, I think. So, true enigmatic football, Condon was probably the greatest player of his era. Ah, big call. Because we had Coulthard last week.
Coulthard, yeah.
However, he usually played as an individual.
Yeah,
and often most
things do.
It was often in conflict with the club and teammates. Recruited from the Collingwood Juniors, he played mainly as a rover and centreman with his dazzling skills. He replaced Billy Proudfoot as captain halfway through 1999. I would skip that bit. One interesting thing I did find out about it is that Collingwood only played with a Sharon football. Now, they actually modified the shape of the Sharon because of Dick Condon's kicking style, which was focused around stab kicks.
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't know too much exactly. Maybe someone who actually played football actually tell me what a stab kick is, but, you know, we talked about it last week. But, so obviously we use a Sharon now. I think that's must be a fairly significant thing, the way he kicked.
Yeah. He was a very interesting character, definitely. He was... it says in another article here that he was far from well balanced in terms of his threshold for violence, which was directed at his own teammates as often as opponents. He had a short temper with club officials and umpires, and had a view that things must always be seen from his own perspective.
Wow.
And he had a propensity for continuously abusing umpires.
Yeah.
So we all love that.
So we haven't heard the last of Dick Condon.
I can't imagine we have.
Right. So we have a special Dick Condon Award in the podcast or something like that.
Also, let's go for our premiership tally. Essendon 1, Fitzroy 1, everyone else 0.
Yes.
And the highest score still stands at Geelong's 16-18, 114, scored in 1897.
Yes.
Right, and that brings us towards the end of our show today. Murph, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
We've got a little something for you to say thank you as well.
Just a little token of our appreciation.
Fabulous.
Now we're taking this photo
and
live.
Isn't it just a great picture of Todd Viney? A card saying thank you, Ryan. And look, it's wonderful. It's really great.
A lot of effort put into that.
Put that up on
If the listeners
media.
Could see what I've received as a gift.
Thank God it's a podcast.
They'd be jealous. Thanks for having me, guys. It's been great.
That's right, you come back?
I'll come back.
Awesome.
More stories to share.
Yeah. And we thought it was fitting having you as a Fitzroy supporter as well on the podcast where Fitzroy actually win
their first premiership.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So thank you to all our valued listeners out there.
Thank you. Please keep on listening and share it with your friends.
Share it with your friends. We'll be back for the next episode, 1899. Moving slowly towards episode three, moving slowly towards the year 1900 to 20th century.
Here it comes.
All right, now, Australia's Kaz, if you remember from last week's episode, Kaz had an interesting way to take us out. We told him to go back and have a think about the way he wanted to end the show. So, Kaz, I'm reluctant to do this, but I'm going to hand it over to you to end the show.
Oh, no.
If anyone's still listening by now, they'll surely be done by the end of this. I have a propensity to clear the dance floor as well. I'm in bands as well for some reason. But this is a bit faster than last week. Okay, here we go. Wait, I did rip this off from another song, didn't I? Foot air! Foot air! We love our foot air! Footy, 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 foot air! Listen to the Kick to Your Kick podcast. Listen to it every day. Share it with your friends! Foot air! Foot air! Thanks very much.
Woo! Excellent!
Yeah.
Okay.
It's all right. It's all right.
Better than the recorder from last week, Tim.
Oh,
much.
Yeah, better. It's a step up.
Well, thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hooroo.
Hooroo.
Good night.
You can contact Kick to Kick on email at kicktokickpodcast@gmail.com. Or add us on Instagram, which is @kicktokick_podcast. Or find us on Twitter, which is @kicktokickpod. And thanks for listening.